Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 7 days until Election Day, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hello.
Hello, John. How has it been going?
Oh, it's a living hell.
I every waking moment. And Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad?
Da-na-na!
I really thought you were going to go with the sports center theme at first.
Are you ready for some football, everybody?
There's got to be a Christmas X sports movie somewhere, right?
It's called Air Bud, all of them.
I guess so.
A Christmas sports movie?
That could be a very good candidate for July at Christmas.
Oh, yeah, we did that. It's called Rocky IV.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Oops. But yes, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are once again in the dead center of Home for the Horror Days here on Christmas Creeps, where we discuss Christmas-themed horror movies or horror-themed Christmas movies, however you want to describe them. These are the movies we're talking about. The spooky, the gross, the creepy. That's what we're talking about today. With this week's episode, we're discussing Christmas Evil from 1980, or as it was known at the time, Better Watch Out.
Remember that other movie that wasn't as good as this movie, also called Better Watch Out?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're going to get into all that tonight. And apparently, the director of this movie hated the title Christmas Evil, but, you know, the studio prevails, and it's called Christmas Evil.
I can see where he's coming from.
I think you could argue that this movie is more Christmas morally gray area.
Yeah.
It's Christmas ambivalent, I believe. Because it's not so much... This really is marketed much differently than the movie that we actually get.
For the better, I think. Well, the movie's better than what the marketing led on.
Yeah. Like, when I was reading up about this movie, I was expecting it's like, it was just one of those weird 80s exploitation movies where it's just like, oh, this homeless guy is crazy because he's homeless, and that's why he's a murderer, and he's wearing a Santa suit because he found one in the garbage because he's also homeless. Like, it was just going to be a, oh, yeah, people that don't got money, they're just all crazy. That's why they don't got the money.
Yeah, and they really tried to sell this. Like, one of the taglines was, like, first there was Halloween, then there was Friday the 13th, and now it's Christmas Evil. So they were really trying to, like, key into the whole sort of slasher genre of vibe. And that's really not what this movie is. And
What is our body count? Four?
Four, if even.
Four, maybe a fifth off-screen that we never really get into?
Oh, man, Brad, when you mentioned that in our back channel last night, I wasn't sure what you were talking about, and then I saw it, and I was just laughing my head off. It was great.
Right?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, so we'll get to that in a little bit, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about that. But also, just real quick, let me see if I can get this poster up real quick here. I want to show you the cover of the DVD that I've got here.
Oh, God.
Because it's just horrible. Christmas Evil. This is the DVD produced by Vinegar Syndrome. It's quite the image, and I don't know that it represents the film particularly well. Here it is. And I'll post a link to this in the show notes as well, because it's
this sucks.
Like, the Santa is, like, green, and he's got this giant bloody knife, and he looks like an absolute... He looks like a cave troll, basically.
This is a very bad cover.
This is the cover for Santa's Sleigh, not for Christmas Evil.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and, I mean, in its favor, I'm glad they put the original title on the cover, because Christmas Evil, and then underneath it, You Better Watch Out. So,
I think the problem is that this movie is mainly trading on its reputation, which is that it's one of John Waters' favorite movies, and it's... a thing that Troma was involved with for a while, at least on the licensing side.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. But the weirdest association that I found with this movie is it was funded by the Pressman Corporation. What's that?
Yeah.
Pressman Toys.
Yeah, that's the factory they filmed, and I read that on like IMDb when I was trying to find any information at all about the director's cut, because I watched the original version, the 93-minute version, not the version with like 10 extra minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the things said it was filmed in Howard Pressman's Toy Factory, and I was like, no, that's a real guy that actually makes toys, isn't it? I know that name.
Yeah, and it's very clearly a toy factory, but the toys they produce in the factory in this film are very suspect. I don't know that any children would be happy to have received those toys.
At least in 1980.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, we have a toy factory? Yeah, we're just making, you know, toy cars and dolls and shit like that. It's just Jill Santos Workshop bullshit.
Yeah. And I don't believe for a second that they actually produced the toys in those scenes for the movie, and I think they just, like, went to their equivalent of a dollar store, bought 50 of one kind of toy, and put it on the assembly line.
Of course! Of course!
No, yeah. I mean, obviously. Yeah. So, I guess, first things first, first impressions. None of us had seen this before this episode.
No.
Yes. What did we think?
Much, much better than expected.
Yes.
Hard agree, yes. And I think it's because we kind of didn't mention it. It's not the slasher movie we thought it was going to be. It's much more controlled and much more sincere about what it's doing, even though what it's doing is still very...
It's still kind of trash, because it is just like, oh, this guy is a murderer because he's crazy. Crazy people are just murderers.
Yeah, there you have that. We could hand wave it away and say it was 1980, but it doesn't. It doesn't get a free pass.
That's what you have to do with it. I mean, that's what I always say about like judging something in the era it was made. The idea that like, oh, people with mental problems are obviously also violent psychopaths. No, that's just people in the 80s thought. So it's not shitty for, even though it is shitty, it's not shitty for the 80s. It's pretty par for the fucking course.
Yeah. And also the other film that we kind of have to discuss in talking about this is Silent Night, Deadly Night, because they're kind of two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. Where Silent Night came out after this, but it's very much about, you know,
sick kills.
It's about sick kills, but it's also about someone who was traumatized at an early age by a Santa Claus and then growing up to do awful things as a Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Except in this case, and I think maybe Silent Night had a little bit to do with that. Maybe they ripped this one off a little bit. But then this one, I don't know, because the problem that Harry, our main character, has in this is much more about, like,
him.
I don't know, personal trauma, because, like, nothing bad happens to him at the beginning of this film. It's just he saw mommy kissing Santa Claus. Yes.
I was so trying to decipher that, because I was like, okay, wait, so is it Harry or is it Phil that thinks that the Santa Claus is really their dad? And then Harry goes downstairs and sees Santa going ham on some 80s bush, and it just traumatizes him.
It's Phil that thinks Santa Claus is the dad, because he's the older brother, for one thing.
No, Phil's the younger brother.
Oh, okay. But so let's unpack this scene a little bit.
Yes, please.
It is 1947, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Christmas Eve, and we have a family. I don't remember their last name. Harrison? I don't know. Anyways. Sure. We have a family with two young boys, and they're visited by Santa Claus. They're standing on the stairs. We have Phil and Harry are the two young boys. Harry, of course, is the main character of this film. And Santa comes to visit and hands out toys, and it's a very magical moment. Then later we see Harry and Phil in bed arguing about whether or not that Santa was real or it was just his dad. I believe it's Phil who says that it's just their dad.
Yeah.
And then Harry climbs back downstairs, and he's at the stairs, and he sees dad dressed as Santa having a lovely conjugal time with his wife, as husbands are wont to do sometimes.
Oh, and the reason you don't remember the last name, because it's stupid as hell, it's Stadling.
Huh. huh? Oh, their last Stadling. Name is Stadling.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Harry is traumatized by this, and we got some Oedipal themes going on, I guess, probably, too. Because why not? And he goes up into the attic, I think, and breaks a snow globe, and then cuts himself with the snow globe.
Yeah, this is the second film that we've watched recently where, like, a broken snow globe at the beginning is, like, a sign of doom to come, you know? Because it immediately makes me think of Dial Code Santa Claus.
There's also Santa Claus 3.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Did they break one in Santa Claus 3? I don't remember.
And also Mr. Burns.
Yes.
What about Mr. Burns?
God damn it. Now you have to post the snow globe Mr. Burns scene in the show notes.
Okay. Yes. All right.
And then we smash cut to 1980. Harry is a grown man working at he's recently become a manager, we find out, at a toy factory, and he used to work on the line with his coworkers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let somebody else take it over there.
From there, we get, I mean, it's what, 40 some years later, it's like Christmas present day. Adult Harry has developed some serious Santa hangups, and like the first thing we see of him as adult Harry is that he's like watching the children of the neighborhood, like spying on them basically from his apartment with some binoculars, and he's literally logging everything that these kids do in his naughty and nice books. And we see on the back wall that he has done this. He's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Got a naughty and nice book for every single year, like 7, yeah. 9.
This movie would not take place in a world with legalized prostitution.
Moss Garcia.
Oh, boy. But he spies on one kid who's, like, cutting out women from porno magazines. And
Moss,
like,
Garcia.
Moss Garcia.
Yeah.
And he, like, writes that the kid is having impure thoughts. And
then, yeah, well, it's Penthouse. He's going to grow up and be into piss.
Yeah, he's going to get into the weird stuff. And then, like, later on, we hear the kids, like, asking, like, saying what they're going to ask Santa for. And Moss apparently asks Santa for a yearly subscription to Penthouse magazine. So Harry's the new manager of this toy factory. One of his coworkers asks him to, you know, take his shift for the night because he's trying to have a nice time with his wife, and Harry is kind of a pushover. He'll go along with whatever people ask of him because he's just kind of that sort of person. And then we get to meet his brother as an adult.
We also find out that this guy was lying and he was at the local bar.
Yeah, you know, drinking because Harry spies him at the local bar.
Yeah,
yeah, and he's just like, I got this dumbass who'll take my shift tonight so I can leave early. I'm going out. You know, and Harry's apartment, too, is just absolutely insane. There's a bunch of Christmas decorations, a bunch of dollhouses and evil dolls. Not that the dolls are evil, it's just that all dolls are evil.
The haunted, you know? Dolls. Yes. Yes.
It's what the original Christmas Creeps headquarters looked like.
Yeah, and Harry's like sleeps in like Santa pajamas. Like, pajamas look like a Santa suit.
He's always humming Christmas tunes. He's got a fixation with Santa. He's got a Santa fixation.
Yeah,
he really,
because he wants
really
to
does.
Be Santa, and he also wants to have sex with his mother. Wait, uh-huh. No, wait, I don't know. You guys didn't like pick up the. I mean, they just use it as like shorthand for you know,
yeah,
mental,
I mean,
illness,
I,
because
oh,
1980s,
I, no,
because
it, yeah, no, I picked it up because they were dropping it pretty fucking thick, but yeah, all it was
saying.
Was just all it was just a shortcut to, yeah, this guy's crazy. He wants to fuck his mom.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly did not pick up on that. I just thought he was sex crazed because of that incident, and not necessarily that it's projected onto his mom.
Well, it's the
bridge you have to make where it's like, okay, he wants to be Santa. He saw Santa going to fucking town on his mom. Therefore, he wants to do so to his mom.
Yeah, yeah. And they're okay. It's 1980, and they're using it kind of as like a lazy shorthand where it's like, oh, because he wants to do this, he's sick in the head, etc. I mean,
yeah. But then after let me move on for a second, because after he spies on his neighbor at the bar, he then goes to his brother's house and spies on them through the window, where he sees like his mom send the two kids to bed, and then his brother and brother's wife are doing it on the couch, and then Harry's outside watching. So like it's kind of all come back around. Now he's spying on his brother and his brother's wife.
They also, I guess they had kind of like a 1980s incel sort of thing going on here too.
Yeah, that's like if Harry could just pay, you know, whatever the fair market rate is in 1980 to get his fuck on every once in a while, he'd be a halfway normal guy.
And dress up as Santa while doing it.
Because... that costs extra, but...
Yeah, and also, you know, this is like, what, New England, like, I take it, it's like the New York City suburbs.
Yeah, the factory had a sign up said Queens. So.
Yeah, okay, so it's in Queens. So it's not like he couldn't go down to Times Square and have himself a good time if he wanted to. This was still, like, when Times Square was, you know...
But it's that same incel thing with, like, no, those are like, worthless trash whores. I want, you know, a pure waifu. You know, but that's the thing. If it was legalized, just, no, you go... Like, it was like the red light district where it was like, no, this is normal. You just go pay $20 and get your rocks off.
Right.
Like, that's what someone said about, like... I don't remember where I read it, but it was a thing talking about red light districts where... No, the idea was that back in the day, you just, you know, just nodded respectfully at your wife as you went downtown... to pay 20, you know, 20 cents to get someone to blow some stuff up your butt. And it was normal. You didn't bug your wife with that stuff. That's what the red light district was for.
Fair enough. Yeah.
We're getting thick into it here in this episode already.
I don't know how to pivot away from this. Gentlemen, help me.
So there's some psychosexual stuff going on, just like in Silent Night, Deadly Night. But
yeah,
the thing about this movie, and it, like you said, it's kind of two sides of the same coin. Whereas Silent Night, Deadly Night is manic and violent, this movie is slow and brooding and has some real vibes going on. I think my favorite part of this movie is actually like the synth soundtrack. Oh, it's so good. It's like, you know.
Yeah,
it reminds me of the It Follows soundtrack, this was like OG from the 1980s, just so good.
Yeah, oh, I think absolutely. One of you mentioned Taxi Driver, and yeah, this movie's definitely seen Taxi Driver, because it knows that those scenes where it's just, you don't need to really say anything, just set a mood, and it works.
And, you know, I had seen somebody else refer to this as Taxi Driver for Christmas, and it kind of tracks, because a lot of the scenes we see where Harry is... sort of psyching himself up to do the thing that he knows he's going to do, where he's going to dress up as Santa and either deliver toys to children who deserve them or get back at children who don't deserve them. It's very much like Travis Bickle, like, training himself to do whatever he thinks he's about to do, whether that be for a good cause or just because he's crazy. And the movie spends a lot of time building up to that. And whether or not it pays that off is really kind of up to you and what you're asking for out of this movie. I was honestly expecting more kills than we got, but I'm glad it didn't go there, because I think that would have cheapened it a little bit.
I'm not disappointed. I thought the first half of this movie was honestly better than the second half.
Yeah, it's very weird, because a modern movie doing this would have started about an hour into this movie.
Oh, yeah, and we would have gotten, like, the kid stuff as flashbacks, and
somebody may mention this in the comments after we post this, and I know we always rag on movies for taking too long to get to the actual point or action, but the build-up is the point of this movie.
Yeah, the question there is, what is the point of this movie? Is the point of this movie to watch Santa do some sick kills? No, obviously not. He does... four, and they're all like off screen.
There's one you could argue is mildly sick, and that's about it.
And the rest are kind of in one burst, and then he's done.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the most shocking scene in the movie, because, like, once it happens, you're like, oh wow, he's gonna go on a rampage. No, not really. No.
Yeah, it's honestly the most out of place scene of the movie. It just feels like at some point the screenwriter director were like, all right, how do we get the townsfolk to turn against him? Because this is definitely a Frankenstein analogy.
Yeah. Or also, the thing that I thought was, like, they went up to the point where they turned it into a slasher film for, like, that one scene. And then they realized, no, we're really not into this. And so they switched back to the original movie.
You'd be like, but, like, no, we already filmed it, though. I mean...
Yeah, we might as well include it. Why not?
We bought this prosthetic eyeball. We had the effects guy rig it up. We're gonna use it.
I mean, we made this lead toy soldier to kill people. We might as well use it, right? So, I want to talk about... So, when he goes to, like, stalk Garcia? Moss Garcia?
That's such a weird scene. I just still don't... I don't know, man.
Yeah, because, like, this is the scene that, like, last night in the comments, this broke Brad's brain, basically. Because,
oh, this is what you're talking about?
So Moskar, no. the kid who, you know, he wants the penthouse subscription for Christmas, you know, Harry as Santa, like, he suits up and he puts on the Santa suit and the beard. And he goes so far as to, like, spirit gum a beard to his face. And, like,
well,
that's serious business right there.
Let's back up a bit, because there's a scene before he goes full Santa where he's stalking Mos Garcia. And this is actually the thing. The fact that he does what he does to Mos Garcia didn't break my brain. But I'm so confused as to, like, he rubs mud all over his face and then he kisses the wall. Like, I guess it's just, again, like, shorthand for, like, oh, this guy isn't right. But it's just such an odd choice. But it works. It works.
Well, okay, so we're interpreting that scene very differently then. Okay.
What?
I didn't see him kiss the wall. Is that...
He leaves two handprints and a very clear, like, lip print on the wall. And they actually, they, like, hold on it after, when he comes back as Santa, too. It's very odd.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, I definitely interpreted that completely differently.
What did you interpret it as?
When I saw, like, the handprints and the face on the side of the building, I had interpreted that as he had come back at some point and killed the kid by smashing his face into the side of the house.
Oh, no, no, no.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
No!
I don't know.
He left him a bag of dirt for Christmas. Christ.
I saw that part. Left a bag of dirt. I thought he was gonna leave him, like...
He put a bunch of dirt in a bag and left the bag on the porch with a note that says, to Mos Garcia.
Oh, see, here's the thing I thought they were leading up to, because he was, like, making lead toys and stuff like that. I thought he was, like, making, like, a pipe bomb or something to give to... Like, he was going to kill Mos Garcia with toys, basically.
Yeah, well, one of the things he was complaining about was that the toys the factory made were pretty low quality. Right, so that's why he was making his own more sturdy ones. But, yeah, then he decided... Oh, what a cat. Uh-oh.
Right, because he worked as an assembly line worker at this toy factory, so at home he's got all the equipment to actually make real toys.
And I'm imagining that 1980 was late enough that we're just like, oh yeah, lead is a thing you shouldn't be putting in children's toys, but I mean...
That's the angle I thought they were going with, is that he was making lead toys in order to poison Mos Garcia.
No, I think he was making lead toys because he just doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Gotcha.
It was just another one of those things where it's like, oh, this guy's crazy. Look at me. You're not supposed to put lead in toys.
I see.
Maybe playing with lead is what drives him crazy. Who knows?
I think while we're on the topic of gifting and working in the toy factory, we should talk about the children's hospital subplot.
Sure, yeah.
Because I think this reading of both the moss scene and everything else that he does along with this scene, we can go into a discussion about whether or not Harry is morally just in what he does. Is he the protagonist? So on and so forth. Is he a Robin Hood figure? So Harry goes to the Christmas party of his company before he goes full Santa.
Right.
Before he goes presidential. And he there's a video from the CEO who's sitting in the tropics somewhere saying, we're gonna donate toys to the children's hospital, so keep production up and donate your own money. And then we see
I would say, here's the thing, Harry is the protagonist of the movie. The question is Harry in any way considered heroic or whatever? Like, no, he's this is Harry's story, so I mean, yeah, he is the protagonist, but it's right. Just a matter of protagonist doesn't have to mean good person or hero or anything.
I understand, but they try to introduce the two we'll talk about the weird introduction of the two detectives.
Oh yeah, in any other movie, this movie would be about the detectives. Like, it would be Silent Night, Deadly Night, 2, 3, 4, one of those,
uh-huh. Or the brother. Or it would be about Philip, which it kind of is, but not enough.
And it maybe should have been enough. About Philip.
Yeah. Because all Philip is basically is like, damn it, Harry's crazy and it's ruining my life because he's crazy. That's all Phil's motivation is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phil is just mad that he has an idiot older brother who's crazy.
Okay. So they donate, the CEO says they're going to donate the toys, and he meets this new young yuppie CEO or C-suite executive that they're training up. And he's like, oh, it's my campaign. I came up with this. And he's like, do you know how many toys you're donating to the kids? Do you know how many kids are in the hospital? He's like, I don't know a damn thing. I don't know anything about how many kids are in that hospital. So it's like all very clearly just a PR stunt. And so Harry goes back after he's gone Santa and steals a bunch of toys or reappropriates a bunch of toys and drives them to the children's hospital. It's a sweet scene. And he just donates the toys.
Yeah, and he has a creepy molester Chevy van that he painted a sleigh on the side of.
Yeah, there's that. It's like the full-on free candy van.
And again, like knowing what this movie, like the name of the movie and what we've already seen, like that when he rolls up to the children's hospital, you're kind of wondering like how, you know, what direction is this going to play? Is he going to start like slaughtering people at the children's hospital, or is he like genuinely like trying to deliver toys to kids? Like, you don't know how sick he is at that point, you know?
Right.
Somebody could set him off and things could go very south very quickly, but no, it's great. He delivers all the toys and all the orderlies and the staff at the hospital are, you know, very appreciative. And then he rides off into the night and it's a fantastic scene.
It's a good scene too, because it takes its time. And I think they know that they're playing with this. What is he doing? Cause he has to call a security guard over, and the security guard's freaked out and unbuckles his gun, is
justifiably really so.
Yeah, I guess a guy dressed up as Santa shows up at a children's hospital in the middle of the night, but
in a van, in an unmarked van.
But then Harry, to his credit, diffuses the situation as Santa,
yeah,
and gives the toys, and everybody's pretty happy. Yeah, it's a good scene.
Yeah. So it's okay. So the next scene after this, though, is it? No, this, because then is the when the big murder happens, right?
Correct.
After this, because now Harry is kind of on the streets of Queens and he comes across a midnight mass, because now it's Christmas Eve. And some of the parishioners coming out of the midnight mass just start making fun of him, making fun of his costume and his van. And like,
isn't it the same executive?
I want to say it is.
I think it is. And I think he seeks him out because he's like driving in his van, recalling what the executive said, and he's pissed off.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And so in a fit of rage, he takes this one of those toy soldiers with the little lead bayonet and just stabs him right in the eye.
Yup.
In a very gruesome scene. And then takes a little hatchet and just like murders two people right in front of everybody, in front of God and Jesus and everybody.
Actually, doesn't one of the women survive? I think he kills three people in this scene.
Yeah, I think he kills
the two dudes and one of the ladies.
Yeah.
And then one of the other ladies is like injured and holding her head, but still very clearly alive.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So I think this movie only has a body count of three.
Four, if we're assuming that, like me, that Moss Garcia is dead.
I don't think you're wrong Garcia about that, because you have bad opinions. But he fucking killed Frank. What the hell?
He fucking killed Frank. Remember the Frank.
His shitty coworker, he fucking slit his throat.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Holy shit. I forgot about Frank. I was one paying the least attention to this movie, too.
I forgot about that.
Well, also, in my defense, we're not even there yet. We're not even there.
So it has a body count of four. He killed three people at the midnight mass, and he kills Frank later.
Yes. Okay.
Moss Garcia notwithstanding. Okay.
Moss Garcia is alive. He has a bag of dirt. He's playing with the dirt because he's a little gremlin child who loves dirt.
Loves dirt and porn.
He's gonna make a couple of boobs out of those that pile of dirt and just play with the boob dirt. Anywho, the next scene after this gruesome murder. I'm sorry. The next scene after this gruesome murder is that Harry finds himself at a Christmas party, and nobody is like vexed that this random hobo Santa just wandered in off the street.
Well, it's because he didn't wander in. The two guys walked out. It's called like the Family and Friends Association, and these two guys wander out and be like, hey, there's a guy just like Santa. Cool. We need a Santa for our party.
Drag him in. And again, there's sort of this will he, won't he tension.
Yeah, it's great.
It is. It's really good. But he's playing it up, and everybody's having a good time. He's having a good time. They're sharing some punch. And then he, like, gives a stern warning to the children. He's like, be nice, or I'm gonna murder you. And then he laughs, and everybody has a good laugh, and then he is sent on his merry way.
Let's be fair. What he says is, like, if you're bad, I'll bring you horrible presents. And then he laughs.
Yeah, and that's, again, this is why I thought he like, put a pipe bomb in the bag he gave to Mos Garcia or something. I don't know.
But also, I love that long pause after he does this, where he, like, threatens the children.
And they're just staring at him.
There's a good, like, five or six second beat where everybody's like, what the fuck? And then he starts laughing. And then he's laughing by himself for another 10 seconds. And then everyone starts laughing.
Yeah. And
the children start laughing. Like, okay. I'm worried for the children in that scene.
Here's what I'll say again. This is supposed to be Frankenstein. He is not going to murder children.
Yeah. He at least has some... He has a compass.
I'd like to remind you that Frankenstein does murder a child.
Completely on accident.
I know, but still.
Brad is revealing himself to be uncultured because he didn't know that about Frankenstein one way or another.
Frankenstein ate those children in self-defense.
You could tell me Frankenstein murdered a dog, and I probably would believe you.
Brad, do you really not know the scene in Frankenstein where, like, he accidentally drowns a little girl?
Never seen a movie of Frankenstein, nor have I read the book.
Oh, boy.
I know... Well, it's not Frankenstein, it's Frankenstein's monster. No. Wait, does the doctor kill
him? Well, in that case, I'm not going to punch you. My fist is going to punch you.
Thank you. No, I'm very unfamiliar with the whole Frankenstein thing, aside from cultural osmosis.
No, there's the famous scene in the original movie is, like, the monster comes across a little girl who's, like, sitting on the bank of a river, and she's, like, throwing flower petals into the water and showing him how to throw flower petals into the water. And he does it, and he's, like, thrilled with it, and then he, like, picks her up, and then he throws her into the water.
Oh.
Like, he's, okay. Like, so overjoyed with himself until he realizes what he's done, and that's why the townspeople come and you know, form an angry mob to chase and murder him.
Okay. Now I know a little bit more about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Which is kind of where the inspiration for the big final stretch of this movie comes in, because what winds up happening is that Frank
and Stein.
Ah, nice. But no. Harry breaks into Frank's home and murders him in his sleep. And then the next day we get that news report where some guy who kind of looks like Frank Zappa just says, like, if you see anyone dressed as Santa Claus, stay away. And he gives this weird, like, 911 number to call, which I assume is, like, the police station.
999-1212. Which is really weird because this was post-911 being a thing, right?
I thought so, yeah. But also, this is definitely New York. I thought for a second this might be Canada, where they may or may not have 911. I don't know. But no, it's just an 80s thing we don't know anything about, basically. And I'm going to dial this number real quick. Actually, no. In the phone. Okay.
Yeah, 911 started in the late 60s, so.
So yeah, typing in 999-1212 into Google gives you absolutely nothing. So let's move on.
Yeah, I do love that guy was a parody of Geraldo before parodying Geraldo was even a thing you would do.
Yeah. Okay, Geraldo is a much better touchstone than Frank Zappa. That makes more sense.
Yeah, no, that dude is supposed to be a parody of Geraldo, who at the time was like a regional news figure in New York.
Okay, that's pretty good then. I hadn't picked up on that. But it's at this point that Philip realizes there might be something wrong with his brother, because he hasn't put the pieces together that his brother is out there killing people. And so his brother, it's Christmas Day now, and his brother's supposed to be coming for Christmas dinner, but something bad's going on with Harry. And basically, Harry returns to the toy factory, breaks all the toys in the factory, just to spite the factory, basically. Because I don't think he thinks the toys are not good enough for children. So he basically fucks up the assembly line. And then that's when he is recognized by the townspeople, and they form an angry mob to come and kill him. He runs home to his brother's house. His brother realizes what he's done, and the fact that he's the killer Santa. And Phil tries to kill Harry. And they have a scuffle where, like, Phil throws him into the back of the van. Harry wakes up, throws his brother out of the van. And then as he's trying to flee the angry mob in the van goes over a bridge, Inception style, and flies off into the night.
Now I have to ask if we watched a different movie, like different cuts of it, or if you're misremembering the scene.
I'm probably misremembering the scene.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Because here's the thing. As I was watching this last night, it started to turn into a fever dream for me, because I definitely did black out for like a good 5 minutes of this movie.
Oh, dear Lord.
Phil chokes out Santa. Phil chokes out Harry. Shoves him into the driver's side of the van. I think John and I watched the same version. And then Harry ends up, because he thinks he's dead, Harry ends up waking up and punching Phil in the face, driving off, then driving off of an overpass and flying off into the night sky.
Right.
Meanwhile, Phil falls down a hill into some trash.
Oh, yeah, that also happens. Can we talk about how Frank and his wife have a Christmas tree in their bedroom for some reason? And I guess the only reason it's there is so that Santa can slash his throat with the star.
Yeah,
that's fair. I mean, and also it's a thing where, like, you want to give your scene as much fun Christmas lighting as you want, as you can get. So I guess, yeah, put a Christmas tree in there and you'll get some nice Christmas lights.
Lots of really good mood lighting in this movie, too. It's like, it's dark, it's dank, but it's got pop, you know, there are lights that pop. It's good.
It's a very vibe-heavy movie.
It's such a good use of, like, the industrial kind of, like, suburb setting. Because you get that grimy city street feel. You've got all of, like, the winter fog and all the Christmas lights that kind of bounce off of the fog. It's just a beautiful-looking movie for as gross and grimy as it is.
Yeah.
And I also love... There's one sequence where it's just a shot of the Rockefeller Christmas tree in New York City, but it's shot from, like, obviously way, way, way far away. It's like you're looking at it through in between a couple of buildings.
It's nestled in there. It's very good. It's
tucked in there. And then you see, like, a Santa Claus and a bunch of dancers, you know, coming onto the ice skating rink. It's very good. It gives the impression that, like, this is something that's happening, you know, in the shadow of New York City, but off in the burbs,
off,
I guess.
Off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway. Come see Christmas Evil off-Broadway.
Yes.
Oh, man, if somebody made a play out of this, I would definitely go see it.
It'd be real good.
I don't know what kind of songs you'd get, but, this would be a fun one to do off-Broadway. So, I guess the last couple of things I'll say is, did you guys, like, recognize any of the cast members in this movie?
But you certainly did.
Okay, so first of all, we have a Tim Allen connection. We have to hit the Tim Allen alarm. Because Moss Garcia's mother is played by Patricia Richardson, a.k.a. Jill Taylor from Home Improvement.
Yeah, before she took up smoking.
Yeah, this is her very first movie, I think, too. So, yeah, good for her. And then she's gone on to do, you know, a lot of Lifetime and Hallmark Christmas movies. So, you know, she started her career with Christmas movies, and she's still going at it today. Good for her. And then Phil is played by Jeffrey DeMunn, who is one of the primary cast members on The Walking Dead for at least the first two or three seasons. He played Dale on The Walking Dead. And, he's in a lot of horror movie stuff. He's kind of just got that... he's one of those horror movie faces, I guess. But then the one that I noticed that was like a blink-and-you-miss-it kind of guy is... God, what's his name? Mark Margolis, who on the IMDb listing credits him as Man Number Two. He's a member of the Christmas party that Harry wanders into. And Mark Margolis is Hector Salamanca from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And it blew my mind to see him just, like, pop in for one scene and then just dip back out. And then, of course, as we said, you know, this is, what's his name? John Waters' favorite Christmas movie. I found a clip where he basically explains why this is... I found a clip where the director basically says that John Waters told him if he had kids, he would make his kids watch this every single year.
Hopefully when they're age appropriate.
Oh, knowing John Waters, no, he'll probably start them young. But yeah, this is Christmas Evil is, I don't know, I think we were all genuinely surprised by this movie.
Absolutely.
And I think there's no better way to transition into the Crankometer than right now, because I think we're ready to give our final verdict on Christmas Evil.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a short runner, but like I said, this movie was only an hour and a half long, and a lot of that was just mood, basically. It's hard to spend too much time talking about it, because it's, at the end of the day, it's a Frankenstein Santa movie that got mislabeled as a Santa slasher movie.
Also, there are lots of like static shots that go on for fucking forever. Like when Harry breaks into Frank's house and he like breaks in through the back, through not the back door, he comes up through the basement.
Yeah, he opens the basement window.
He comes up through the basement and then into the kitchen, and he opens the kitchen door, and he's like slowly stalks through the kitchen, but it's this one like static shot on the door, and I swear I just like closed my eyes to rest my eyes for a few minutes, opened them back up, and he's still slowly walking through the room.
It reminds me a lot of Nightcrawler, and I mean that in a very good way. Like, there's so many good shots of, like...
That's a good call,
Night scenes, but we have, like, the 80s kind of Milltown grit. Oh, it's great. With the Christmas lights and Christmas decorations.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
It's, like, the pace is so deliberate and so like, slow, but purposefully so. And so, like, when he's, like, stalking through the house, you're like, okay, something's going to happen. And it's just... It's extremely tense. It really works.
Now I just want to watch Nightcrawler again.
I'd say, to this movie's credit, this movie knows to like have these weird, creepy, unsettling scenes involving kids and then to do nothing with them is almost worse than if, like, oh, it's just a guy killing kids.
Yeah. Like, I guess that will they, won't they tension.
The threat is enough, I think. And they know that. And that works. So, yeah, let's jump into the crankometer. This is our patented XY-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is our Christmas quotient, which rates how Christmassy a film is. And the Y-axis is the quality quotient, which is how good a film is. So, gentle friends, Christmas Evil, X-axis, how Christmassy?
I think it gets by on vibe and feeling alone a bit. I used to spend a lot of my... Christmases up in Ohio in kind of the Rust Belt, and I think it nails kind of that Christmas in the Rust Belt aesthetic a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot. I'm gonna give it at least a 3 just from that alone. And also, he's like fulfilling Saint Nick's kind of MO a little bit. That's a plot angle.
That's
That's just my... I'm just going to go with my gut here and say it's but...
Yeah, this movie does kind of lack a little bit in explanation sometimes. I feel like it could have done with about 5 more minutes of dialogue total throughout the movie. You don't need to over-explain shit like that fucking Black Christmas remake. But just a little bit more going on would have been nice.
Yeah, you don't need a lot of exposition because they do a pretty good job of like, meting it out throughout the film, but... I don't know. One or two more scenes of Harry and his brother, I think, would have fleshed things out nicely.
Yeah, which maybe that's what the deleted scenes were. The one deleted scene I did read about was there was a scene where it was the very beginning of the movie of Harry getting promoted, but the actor playing Harry was so fucking hungover that he like nearly threw up while they were shooting, so they just didn't use the scene. They're like, oh, we don't have extra film. Fuck it, we're just not putting the scene in.
Oh, yeah, and the guy playing Harry in this movie, Brandon Maggart, is pretty great. He's pretty, like, he's got that, I don't want to call him an everyman kind of look, but he's just got that doughy kind of...
He has that, like, put-upon Bill Murray look to him.
Yeah, that's, there it is. He's got a very, like, lesser Murray brother kind of feel to him. But he makes it work, because that's the kind of character that Harry is. He's like a put-upon schlub who's got his own set of issues going on. And, yeah, you kind of buy that he would either give kids presents or fucking murder their parents.
You know what the hardest thing for me to, like, parse with the Murrays is?
What's that?
That the Murray in National Lampoon's Vacation, like, what, 84, that looks exactly like Bill Murray, is actually Brian Doyle Murray. Uh-huh. And then in Wayne's World, like, 10 years later, it's full-on, like, I'm talking like this, Brian Doyle Murray.
He's
like,
what the fuck mode.
Yeah, what the fuck happened in those 10 years?
Oh, a better comparison. Bill Murray in Scrooged and then Brian Doyle in Christmas Vacation a year later. Yeah. So, Brian Doyle aged for all 4 Murray brothers.
Yeah.
They put a curse on him, I think. Also, I'd like to talk about the hatchet that Harry uses to murder those 3 people real quick.
Okay. Because
I just pulled up a screenshot of it, of just him holding the axe, and it's like, it looks like a duck with like a little tuft of hair on top, and it's got a little eyeball, and like the duck bill on it. It's fucking great. It's a great piece of design work. It's very silly, and I'm definitely gonna share this with you guys because why?
Yeah, let me see the picture. Just in passing, watching it, I figured it was some like stereotypical cowboys and Indians type toy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a toy hatchet.
Oh, yeah, that. It probably is, but it's definitely supposed to be a duck.
It's got a googly eye on it.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Can we also, as a quick aside, say that this ended up on the video nasties list, and I don't know why it. I mean, it's got a murder, but.
Because the video nasty list was a lot of like hand rigging dumbass bullshit, and this is a movie that involves murder and kids.
Yeah, the pedo panic in the UK, I guess, maybe.
Yeah,
is that a little later? I don't know.
That was a lot later.
Okay.
What's the deal with the video nasties again?
The video nasties was just basically a stuffy shirted, panic in response to giallo films, pretty much.
Is monocles popping off?
Oh yeah, it's basically England complaining about slasher films, right?
Yeah. Essentially, okay. And I, from what I remember, like the main thrust of it was a fucking American anyway.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah, I like the way that you,
real quick.
I like the way that you described it, John, of the Queen's list of sick films to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me find this fucking guy's name real quick. Because there was one guy that was super responsible for all of it, and as soon as he died or retired, it immediately let up.
Yeah, so the list is comprised of three sections. Prosecuted films, non-prosecuted films, and then section three, video nasties. And the video nasties couldn't be prosecuted for obscenity, but were liable to seizure and confiscation under a less obscene charge. So basically...
We don't like it.
We don't like it. It's not that bad, but we don't like it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, here's the list of, like, some of them. It's, Christmas Evil, Dawn of the Dead, what else? Friday the 13th, fucking Foxy Brown.
Faces of Death.
Yeah, Night of the Living Dead. It's just Suspiria. It's a bunch of...
The Thing, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Prom Night, Night of the Living Dead, yeah, Night Beast. All these just like classic horror films that apparently didn't make the cut for the UK.
And a bunch of movies I literally only know about because of Red Letter Media, like Extro.
Yeah. Just the absolute dregs of the dregs. And hey, Silent Night, Deadly Night. Let's see. It was banned by the BBFC, but not classed as a video nasty. And it was released uncut in 2008. So, like, Silent Night, Deadly Night was... Oh, wow, no. Silent Night, Deadly Night was, like, re-rated earlier than Christmas Evil. Christmas Evil didn't get re-rated until 2012. Yeah.
Some of the prosecuted ones, for reference to anyone who doesn't want to bother looking up the list, is stuff like... I mean, stuff that's pretty obvious, though. It's just, like, stuff that's just gross-out shit, like Cannibal Holocaust or, like, Last House on the Left, I Spit on Your Grave. I mean, it's like, yeah, you get the idea that those movies are basically just guys seeing how much they can get away with gore. But the idea that these need to be prosecuted is just, I'm just making the jerk off motion right now. It just doesn't work over podcast.
Exactly. The stuff that like is obviously just made to gross you out. And there's a fair number of other holiday slashers on here that we might get to at some point down the road. I see Late Night Trains on here, which is a Christmas horror film from the 70s.
Ooh.
So we might, we have to branch out and do some of those here in the future. But hey, let's get back to the topic at hand. X-axis rating. Should we... I'm willing to give it a 3. I'm willing to bump it up to a 4 if we can come up with a good justification for it.
I'm trying not to get distracted by the video nasties list. I think a 3 is a good rating. It definitely has a strong Christmas vibe to it. You can't really pull this movie off and not be at Christmas. Like if you just cut and paste in Christmas with Easter or whatever, it wouldn't work.
No. Yeah, and if you just take him out of the Christmas setting and have it being some weird guy who dresses up as Santa in like the middle of May, yeah, no,
that'd be a fun movie. That'd be a different movie.
Even more inscrutable, yeah. So yeah, I would give this a solid 3. Definitely a 3. It's definitely got the Christmas flavor. I love that they use so many Christmas songs in the movie, just like standard obvious Christmas songs that either Harry's humming or playing in the background. It just works. I just love the general Christmas vibe of the film.
It doesn't feel shoehorned in like so many modern films, though.
Yes.
Because it's background. It's a lot of like background music or music at the party, but it still works. Only once or twice do I feel like they make the music the focus of the scene.
Right. You know? Yeah. But there's that Christmas party scene where there's like a band where it's a guy with a saxophone and a drummer and I think someone with a guitar. And they don't play a whole lot. I don't know. But yeah, so that's, let's say a 3. So then over onto the y-axis, how good of a film do we think this is? I think this is going to surprise us.
I, for what it's worth, I think this is my favorite film we've done for Home for the Horror Days.
Wow. That's surprising.
I really enjoyed this. I really liked it. I think I've said this before, I'm not a big horror person, so I feel like the suspense angle that they played up was good.
Definitely.
Nice scenes, nice music, sound effects. I liked it a lot. I for my part, would probably give it a 4. I'd probably put it in the top 10 of films that we've done for this show. Okay. I was very surprised.
Yeah, honestly, me too. I was ready for this to be like a real grimy, I mean, down in the dregs of like horror movie sort of slasher.
And you would think that this is like, because it was Troma that handled it, you think this is going to be like grindhousey and cheesy and bad, but good in that way. But it's not. It's just really good.
Troma's attraction was just how much it pissed people off, this movie.
Yeah. And I think it was still in that era where you could make a horror movie and set it at Christmas, and that was enough to incense people.
Right.
But, I think this is, like, proof positive that just because a movie was made, you know, in the 80s and for less, you know, less than $1 million for relatively cheap, that doesn't mean it has to be, you know, a gross, grindhousey kind of exploitation movie. You can still make good quality, sort of suspenseful movies and have them not be just kill fests.
Yeah.
I appreciate that about this. I appreciate that it took its time and, you know, situated Harry as a character and made you, if not care about him, definitely understand where he's coming from and why he's doing the things that he's doing.
Yes.
And whether or not you care for the ending, I think the ending is a little...
John, I felt like... Yeah.
One of you two said it that like they didn't really know how to end the film, and I definitely agree.
I said that probably my biggest problem with this movie is just the ending. It feels like a cop out. I don't know if I would have been satisfied if Harry died at the end either, but I don't know. Like the weird magical ending just feels like it cheapens the whole experience just a little bit. Just have him escape, you know, if you really want to set it up for a sequel or something. Don't have him become literally Santa Claus.
Yeah, just have him drive off into the distance, you know? That's all.
Yeah.
He drove off a cliff and died. The problem with the movie here is that they fuck up the sound editing a little bit, because you hear this car explosion, but it's in the scene before the car goes flying off the cliff. And that's why people are like, was that the sound of like Phil falling down into a pile of trash? Like, no, that was an explosion. It's just mistimed.
Oh, and so the last thing that Phil sees is like a hallucination, and it is him imagining that his brother gets away.
I see. Still, I didn't care for it that much.
Yeah, yes. It's not a very good ending.
Still kind of a cop out. Yeah, it's whatever. It's the least interesting part of the film to me. The most interesting is basically like Brad said, the first half where we're understanding what's going on with Harry, and I appreciate how deliberate a lot of that is. I'm gonna agree with Brad and say this is a solid 4. J-Man.
Yeah, I'll go with 4. This movie, it's marketed terribly, but when it comes down to it, yeah, it's a very, yeah, like Taxi Driver, Frankenstein kind of thing. The only way I would make it better was I would honestly take all the kills out of it, because right. it works even better if Harry is just like a misunderstood, mentally unwell guy that's just getting shit upon by everybody in town just because, like, that's just how mobs work, you know?
And I think they could still play it up because he's, like, near the children, and if they found out he was stalking all the children and found his journals or whatever, I think that would be enough of a justification for the last quarter of the film where he's being hunted, you know?
Yeah, I get that, because then, I mean, I don't want to say it, but yeah, then it becomes a question of, like, what is he really intending to do with the children? And then you have, you know, you've given the mob a pretty damn good reason to hunt him down.
Well, my point is I'm trying to avoid that, though. I want this movie to be more about, like, a weird guy getting persecuted by by the townsfolk, basically. Make him more Frankenstein. Like, it's just, oh, he's just an innocent idiot, you know?
Okay.
I gotcha. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Still a good film. Still a solid 4, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a surprising result. Christmas Evil lands a positive 3, positive 4 on our crankometer.
I would never have guessed in a million years.
It honestly surprised me. Like, I've had this DVD sitting on my shelf for a couple of years trying to find the right reason to put it on, and boy, I'm glad I did, because this is a keeper. This is really a keeper. It's up there with Black Christmas in the realm of sort of Christmas horror films that are kind of misunderstood. Because Black Christmas, for all of its, you know, grossness and kills, it does a lot of things that you wouldn't expect from a slasher, because it's really setting up what a slasher film can even do. And so many of the slashers we've seen after that just threw away a lot of what made Christmas or Black Christmas so interesting. But yeah, Christmas Evil on its own is just it sits kind of on its own. It does its own thing, and it does it well. So I would definitely recommend people go seek this one out if you can find it, because we've had a heck of a time trying to watch this for this episode.
Yeah, I have a Shudder subscription through Amazon. It's on Shudder, but I couldn't find a way to watch it through my Amazon Shudder subscription. I would have to actually sign up and give Shudder money directly. I tried playing it on Vudu. Vudu's ad things kept fucking up. I eventually got through it, but it took me over like 2 hours to watch a fucking hour and a half movie just because I kept trying to reload the goddamn page. And then on top of all that, do you want to know the punchline to all of this?
What's that?
It's on archive.org.
Are you kidding me?
Whoops.
Well, that's great, because we found a YouTube link where somebody had loved the entire film, and Brad watched that on YouTube, right?
I did, and it only had like 1,000 views, and you said the account is now suspended, so it must have...
The account was closed, yeah. It wasn't suspended. It says it was terminated. YouTube's pretty clear about that language between accounts, like if an account was closed by the creator or if it was actually banned.
That's so really weird that in the day after I watched it, it's probably just a coincidence, but who knows? Maybe they got some sort of notification.
And then I'm sitting here with a Blu-ray copy of this movie, and...
The most legit out of all of us.
Keep buying physical media, damn it. Oh, hey, speaking of which, can we talk real quick before we go about Apple buying up the rights to all the Peanuts specials?
Yeah.
Have you guys heard about this?
I guess it's never going to get a physical release again unless they talk somebody into it.
It's getting one. I got another physical release. Like, they're coming out on 4K, I think, this week.
Uh-huh. But
basically, the gist is, Apple bought the broadcast rights to all the Peanuts cartoon specials, Christmas specials, the Halloween special, Thanksgiving. And so this is the first year since 1966 or 65 that they haven't been broadcast on over the air on TV.
Gotcha. You did tell us about that.
It is the end of an era. And it's all because Apple bought the rights from, I think, ABC.
Thanks, Steve Jobs.
So... Thanks, CBS, for selling it to Disney, and then Disney for selling it to Apple.
Oh, did Disney seriously have it before Apple?
Well, I mean, Disney owns ABC.
Okay, I found the asshole. It's James Furman. And if you ever get mad about why the Ninja Turtles couldn't have fucking nunchucks, it's this piece of shit James Furman's fault.
Oh, you're talking about the Video Nasties guy.
Yeah.
That's right, because didn't they have, like, the... superhero turtles in the UK or whatever.
Yeah, they couldn't call them Ninja Turtles, so they had to call them Hero Turtles.
It was all can be put upon the shoulders of this one stupid piece of shit.
That's
Yeah, as soon as he retired, it immediately, like, let up. Rust and fucking piss, that asshole.
Good lord. So, yeah, like I said, physical media is the way to go. I know it's rough having a DVD take up space on your shelf, but it's worth it in the long run. And all of that to say, Christmas Evil is actually pretty good, you guys. You should go check it out.
Yes.
Any final thoughts before we end the show tonight?
We made it. We made it through an entire episode without doing video game chat even once.
Brad,
I'm so proud of you. No, I just brought it up.
This
for the
movie
fact
takes
that
place in 1980. There's no fucking video games.
I know. That's why it's. But we still didn't even manage to tie it in. I'm proud of us.
There was that one scene in the bar, the Odd Couple bar, where we saw somebody playing darts of some kind, and I'm sure there was a video game machine next to it.
Still, we did good. I'm proud of you, boys.
Good for us. Hooray. So that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps. Thank you for listening to this wacky road trip through Christmas horror movies with us. We've made it through another Home for the Horror Days, and hopefully next year's will be just as illuminating.
Yes.
If you'd like to email us any questions or comments or recommend any horror Christmas horror films for the future, you can send those to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com or tweet at us at Christmas Creeps on Twitter or facebook.com/Christmas Creeps if you really want to use Facebook. You know, like and comment and subscribe. Click that bell if you're watching us on YouTube for some reason. Do all the fun stuff that everyone says you should do, because, hey, we love you, and we want you to spread the word with us.
And if you haven't voted, go vote. If you're registered, you should go vote.
Yeah, this episode's coming out a week before Election Day, and we definitely encourage you to go vote.
If you live in the U.S., that is.
If you live in the U.S.
You should vote no matter where you live, but especially
if you
live in the
U.S.
Yeah,
I mean, if you already voted, fuck it, vote again. They won't stop you.
I mean, who's gonna stop you? Actually, lots of people will stop you, but if you do go vote, please be safe, wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart.
That's why you can vote again. They can't recognize you wearing a mask.
Yeah,
the perfect crime.
That's why if you change your mask and go back to the house again, they'll give you more candy on Halloween.
Exactly.
That's how that works, right? So that's gonna do it for Home for the Horror Days, everybody. I've been Joseph Wade.
Bradford.
Oh, that's me. I'm John 5 the Human Robot. Yeah.
Go vote, everybody. Have a good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.